Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're looking at something, well, a bit different. It's really quite poignant source material.
Yeah, it's definitely not your usual research paper.
Not at all. It's a collection of these short Japanese poetic verses. They're called senri, and they paint this incredibly vivid and often pretty dark picture of what life's actually like inside Japanese academia.
That's putting it mildly. I mean, these verses, they're collected under the title Academy Life Senri, Research and Career Woes. And while they're creative works, they're clearly based on some sharp observations across the whole academic world there. They really captured these raw shared anxieties. You see everything from, you know, stressed out PhD students up against lab politics right through to, well, they mentioned elderly postdocs, which is just heartbreaking.
Right. So our mission today isn't really about analyzing the poetry as poetry. It's more about using these like concentrated bits of emotion and experience as a shortcut. We want to pull out the key insights into that relentless grind for research funding, the surprising disconnect between publishing success and actual job security, and just this overwhelming sense of instability that seems to, you know, define the whole academic career path these days.
Exactly. It gives us this very specific culturally framed window into what's probably a universal problem, actually.
It really forces you to see that academic stress isn't just some abstract idea. It's real, it's measurable, and here it is, just laid out in 17 syllables.
Yeah, exactly. 17 syllables packing a huge punch.
So maybe to set the stage, let's start right in the lab. That pressure cooker environment. There's this perspective from a cell culture researcher, and they're grappling with data, the need for results. It's intense, they write. Significant difference, p-value or death, which comes first? Increasing the concentration.
Yeah, that says so much, doesn't it? It captures that moral tightrope perfectly, that constant daily tension between doing good science and, well, the desperate need to maybe nudge the results just to survive.
Just to keep your job, basically.
Mm-hmm. To survive.
It's embedded. Just a system. And that need to survive. That takes us straight to the money, right? The funding. It really sounds like getting funding is a first, maybe the biggest hurdle, specifically this big Japanese government grant system, the Kakeni.
Oh, absolutely.
For listeners who aren't familiar, what exactly is Kakeni? Why is applying for it so all-consuming?
Well, Kakeni is it's basically the lifeblood for a lot of scientific research in Japan. It's the main way to get competitive government funding. And because the stakes are just so incredibly high, the application process doesn't just dominate your life for a bit. It genuinely eats up whole seasons.
Right. And what's fascinating in these poems is how they track the specific stresses, like the emotional toll, the practical headaches. It seems to start with this real sense of self-doubt. One verse mentions realizing your poor Japanese language skills because kakeni, that I can't write.
Yeah, that's rough. It's not just about the science. It's framed as this major writing challenge, almost like a literary test you have to pass.
An obstacle course, yeah. And one with a terrifying deadline looming.
Oh, the deadline panic comes through loud and clear. There's one verse, maybe it's from an IT person's view, I don't know. It says, Kakeni access increasing, that's how I know the deadline.
Right. You only know it's really crunch time when the submission website starts grinding to a halt.
Exactly. Yeah. Classic sign.
So, okay, they finally wrestle the application in. They hit send. Is there lasting relief? Or does the focus immediately shift to how hard it is to actually win these things?
Well, the relief is definitely there. It's immediate. You feel it. But yeah, it's short-lived. The act of submission itself, though, it sounds quite profound in the poems. Like, it marks the end of this intense period of isolation. We see descriptions like, submitting kakeni, the summer passes. Or, even more poetically, finally hearing the sound of insects after clicking submit.
So it's like, okay, I can rejoin the world now. That whole season dedicated just to writing this thing is finally over.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, reality bites. The sources very quickly pivot to just how hard it is to actually succeed. You hear about people failing three times without knowing the kakeni know-how, or just facing continued losses without knowing kakeni rules.
Which suggests the whole system feels a bit opaque, like it really favors insiders who already know the tricks.
That seems to be the feeling, yeah.
Yeah.
It creates this cycle of failure for those on the outside.
Which then leads to, well, desperation, I guess. And this is where it gets very modern.
Right. When the usual approach, good writing, solid science, feels like it's not enough, people start looking for shortcuts. Anything to game the system. So we read about researchers relying on AI for kakeni proofreading.
Okay, that makes sense. Outsourcing the polishing.
Yeah, or even just throwing their hands up and deciding to rely on AI and luck.
Wow. Just luck. So when skill and effort aren't cutting it, you basically automate what you can and just hope for the best.
Seems like it. Crossing your fingers for a positive random number generator, essentially.
Well, that's pretty depressing, isn't it? Relying on luck and outsourcing integrity. But okay, here's where things get really interesting for me because it seems to just flip the standard academic story on its head. We always hear publish or perish, right? That publishing great papers is the golden ticket. That's how you secure your future.
That's the mantra.
But are these poems saying that's just not true? That it's kind of a myth? How can major achievement not lead to security?
They really do suggest that publish or perish is often just a cruel lie. These verses, they expose the hierarchy, the sort of brutality almost, of trying to publish in those top-tier journals. The despair is palpable. Like when nature rejects the paper, research ends.
Just like that, research over.
Apparently. For the researcher on the edge, that rejection can be the final straw. It's often this all-or-nothing game, and it's decided by just a couple of reviewers at one specific journal.
And the real kicker, the ultimate bitter irony. Even success doesn't guarantee anything.
Exactly. That's the shocker.
There's that researcher whose contract ended even though they had a big success, getting the paper in Cell Reports, but the career stops.
Yeah, and Cell Reports is a good journal. It's a serious achievement. But nope, the contract still runs out. No renewal.
It's just a staggering contradiction. You hit the target you were told would save you, and instead it coincides with your job ending.
The poets nail that contradiction perfectly, and they flat out deny that common academic wisdom. There's one line. The claim that papers save your career is a lie. And this is from someone whose term ended even after getting a paper in CNS, Cell, Nature, or Science.
The CNS paper, and they still lost their job.
Seems so. The system apparently valued the fixed-term contract endpoint more than the massive scientific breakthrough.
When you see that, when the pressure's that high, and even hitting a home run doesn't keep you in the game, you start to understand why we saw hints earlier about, potentially compromised integrity.
Right. It fosters this environment focused only on the short term.
And it breeds this deep pessimism about the research itself. Remember that chilling line. Basic science is hijacked by fabricated science.
When the pressure for positive results is overwhelming, you can see how corners might get cut, how integrity across the board might suffer.
Which brings us right to that job security cliff edge, the whole precarious nature of these temporary contracts.
Yeah, the Senri are full of examples where the term just ends. Often prematurely, sometimes right when someone's hitting their stride.
Look at the assistant professor one. Term runs out before using up the kikini.
Think about that. You succeed in getting the funding everyone's fighting tooth and nail for.
And then you lose the job before you can even finish the research that the funding body valued so highly. It's nuts.
Or the sheer emotional gut punch of this one. Receiving applause at a conference, but the term ends.
Oh man, you get public praise for years of work, maybe the highlight of your career.
And you go back to your desk, and there's basically a dismissal notice waiting for you.
And for someone just starting out, getting their PhD, the timing is almost calculatedly cruel. Congratulations, the paper is out, but goodbye.
Yeah, the celebration email and the termination letter arrive in the same week, maybe the same day.
The message couldn't be clearer, could it? We value your output, your paper, but we don't value you enough to offer a stable career.
Exactly. Your contribution is extracted, and then you're disposable.
This precarity. It must feed directly into this phenomenon you mentioned earlier, the perpetual job hunter.
The person spending years, maybe even decades, just trying to find one permanent position. This is where the poems describe the real long-term grind.
And the odds just sound impossible. There's that verse capturing the hopelessness. 100 people gather for a public position, no one wins.
Yeah, it implies either the position was never really open, or the competition is just so astronomical that effectively nobody gets it. A zero-sum game.
And the sheer length of the search, it's shocking.
It is. We see the bleak picture of the perpetual postdoc who is job searching 10 years later, still job searching. And it concludes with this deeply sad line. Work, work, still work, but the job is far away.
10 years. Still looking. The emotional toll of that must be immense.
Unimaginable. And we get a glimpse of that toll. We need to just pause on this for a second. One person describes receiving 100 plus rejection emails, a Nori mail, after turning 50.
Over 100 rejection emails, each one a hope crushed, and they counted them after decades in the field.
That number, it just tells you everything about the odds, doesn't it?
Yeah. And the system starts to feel like a trap you can't escape.
It does. The sources describe academia as this place where stepping back or moving forward is hell. They even use the term Winjigoku,
which means
endless hell, no escape.
Wow. Heavy. And there's that powerful metaphor, too, for just getting stuck, for time passing differently inside academia.
Right. The older postdoc who says, staying too long in academia, it becomes Ryugujo.
Ryugujo. That's the mythical palace from Japanese folklore, isn't it? Where time flows differently.
Exactly. Like Urashima Taru, the fisherman who visits and returns to find centuries have passed. The researcher finally leaves the academic bubble. It feels like they've aged dramatically, while the outside world barely noticed them. They're completely out of sync.
Deeply disconnected. Which I guess brings us to the final part of this story, the people who do leave.
Yeah, the exit. The poems show this radical life shift required. It's about losing that specific identity and trying to reintegrate into, well, normal life.
And that shift sounds really stark. The former postdoc is now leaving the lab, buried in the crowded train.
Or just wearing a suit and riding the crowded train today.
Moving from that specialized, maybe isolating world of the lab to just being another anonymous commuter.
Mm-hmm. And there's also this really poignant sense of realizing what they missed. Leaving research, seeing the city for the first time.
Like they were so focused, maybe so obsessed, that the lab walls literally hid the rest of the world.
That's the impression. That intense focus blinding them to everything else.
But even after they leave, after they put on the suit and get on the train, the attachment is still there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. The identity doesn't just switch off. There's that heartbreaking image of the former researcher whose lab notes line up in my house.
Physically out, but mentally, emotionally, the work, the identity, it's still right there with them.
Exactly. It's hard to let go.
So if we try to synthesize this incredibly insightful deep dive using these senris, what are the big takeaways?
I think three major systemic pressures really stand out. First, research success, even big success, just doesn't guarantee security. That whole publish or perish idea, often a lie.
Right. Point one, success, security.
Second, the funding process, especially Kakeni in this context, is all-consuming. It feels opaque, and often it seems to come down to luck as much as merit.
Okay. Point two, funding is a beast.
And finally, the career path itself seems designed to trap highly skilled people in long-term precarity. It pushes many towards these reluctant, often really painful, departures.
Point three, the path leads to instability or exit.
Okay.
So what does this all mean for you listening to this? I mean, these short poems, they feel like a huge warning sign, don't they? That the academic system, at least in this context, maybe in many places, is fundamentally broken. It's sacrificing talent and stability for what?
Mm-hmm.
Short-term measurable outputs.
It seems like a system designed to produce research papers, perhaps at the expense of nurturing actual lifelong scientific careers.
Yeah. Which leaves us with a final thought, doesn't it? A really philosophical question that comes straight from the senri themselves.
Mm-hmm. It's one for you, the listener, to maybe mull over. Given all this instability, someone loses the job, the position, the affiliation, but they still have all that deep knowledge, that decades-long passion for discovery. Is the scientist without a job still a scientist?
Mm.